It's showtime, folks!
Ooh, so this is the thanks I get for working overtime.
Overtime!
Oh, hello there. Welcome into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. The show is overtime, clocking in at 6:01 here on your Tuesday. I hope everybody out there in Radio Land, and hello to you also live streaming us on Periscope right now. Hope you all are having a fantastic end to your Tuesday. We will be with you up until 8 o'clock per usual, winding down your day, recapping the Tuesday that was in the world of sports. I'm your host, Tanner Carson. I got Reek RB Rick Butler to my left, and I got the one and only Cole McCormick up in the producer's perch up there on the ones and twos, making sure everything technical is very smooth and sound, and taking your phone calls on the Fan Run phone lines as well. Gentlemen, how are we?
Great. I'm doing great.
Pretty good, TC. Pretty good.
Good to see you back in here again. It's been a couple of weeks.
Yes, it has.
Did you miss us last week?
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
You couldn't. I know DB did a Tuesday show, so that's why you couldn't be with us last Tuesday. But I think you also had schoolwork and stuff to get to.
Was there a week before that?
Nah.
I don't think so.
I think you only took a 1 week absence, I'm pretty sure.
That's right, because it was WrestleMania, and then the Superstar Shakeup, and then this week. That's how a lot of the times I go about my events, is I figure out which big wrestling events happen, because that's the most consistent thing probably in my life that's not work or school.
That's a good way to do it. That's a good way to keep a nice little mental calendar there, Rick. Oh, we got Tennessee baseball about to start. Early first pitcher, Lindsey Nelson. The ball's having a midweek showdown with Gardner Webb. Oh my gosh, Gardner Webb wearing camo uniforms?
Digital camo.
Digital red and black camo uniforms.
Yeah, they're not good.
Oh, and Bob Kessling on the call. Ooh.
Kess.
Still weird. It's very weird to see him on TV.
Yeah, it is.
Still strange to
really
see him on TV a little bit there. But the Volatile is back in action out at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. And we begin the program with the postmortem for the Nashville Predators. In case you can't tell, Rick is in here. In case you didn't know, he was from the Dallas area or a fan of the Dallas Stars. Well, he has a nice Tyler Seguin sweater on right now.
That's right.
Rick, go ahead and take a victory lap. I think you've earned it. Dallas Stars take down the Preds in round one, 4-2. They get the 2-1 overtime victory last night. Go ahead, talk. Talk about it. Whatever. Go on, say something.
It was expected.
Oh, come on. No, you told me you were on pins and needles and all nauseous from the entire third period on last night. Entirely expected.
It was first off, last night's game was just an incredible sports game as its own. From the third period in overtime, it was stand up in front of your TV because you can't help but not sit down. That was awesome. Granted, the Nashville Predators, when they went on a power play, it was complete and utter advantage Stars. And then it's like, and I'm not just trying to rub this in, because frankly, like, they're not a rival of ours. Like, I really couldn't care less, although it was a pretty chippy series throughout.
That's true.
Historically bad. Dead last in the NHL in the regular season.
0-15 in the series.
Yeah, in power plays. 0-15. It was bad. But I think the crazy thing about this NHL playoffs is the top four seeds, the top two from each region, are out due to the wild cards. As long as, who is it? I believe it's Columbus. I believe Columbus is the last wild card. So if they can pull it out over the Leafs tonight, that's a hell of a thing right there. And I'm not a huge NHL fan. I rarely watch during the regular season. I will watch the opening drop, and then I will watch the playoffs. But boy, am I all in right now. That was a fun series.
Maybe fun for you.
For me.
There was few fun moments for Predators fans, Pred supporters, whether you are a diehard and you tune into every game or almost every game, whether you're only tuning in for the playoffs, what have you. There was not that many fun moments to be found. You had a couple of flukes. You really had a couple of flukes that the Preds were able to win. You had the overtime winner,
right?
And game two, which was coming off of Craig Smith's overtime goal. Before that, man, it was a very frustrating game. You had what could be considered a fluke in that 3-2 win on the road at Dallas. It wasn't really fun. It was, even when you won, it was kind of frustrating. And I think for the majority of the Pred season, that's kind of like in one series, you can kind of see the gripes of Preds fans.
What I noticed the most from the entire series is just looking at the Predators side of things, the top line was invisible.
I believe the top line
had one goal the entire series. And again, like, I'm not trying to toot the stars.
No, you're not being wrong, because the only person who was just a consistent scoring threat, a consistent threat to get points himself, was Rocco Grimaldi.
Yeah, the guy who's Rocco, like, 5'6", right?
The smallest player in the entire National Hockey League.
He was the only guy we were concerned about. But the thing is that if you get into playoff hockey, the teams that you face are likely going to be on their best. And for us, our best was our goalie and our top line. The line of Sagan, Ben, and Radulov was just nightmares for Nashville. And ultimately, that could have been counteracted by what is typically a very good top line from the Predators. Between, who is it, Arvidsson, Forsberg, and Johansson.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Subban not on that top? No, Subban somewhere else. But yeah, and going into the series, that's what I thought it was going to be was, man, are we going to be able to do enough? Is Ben Bishop going to be able enough to slow those top three down? Turns out, we didn't even really need to slow them down. They just didn't really show up.
No.
And I think that could be a scary thing for the Predators.
It was. Even if you're not a huge hockey fanatic, even if you don't watch a whole lot, if you're just a casual sports watcher, you can see the Preds' top line, you could just see that. You can see, man, there's a lot of real inconsistency here. There's a lot of lack of drive and just emotion. It's really complacent. And you could say maybe that's been a problem for the Preds these last 2 years. You go from 2 years ago, you make the cup final, you take a really loaded Penguins team to six games, and you lose in a heartbreaker in Bridgestone in game six. Then you're out in the semifinals of the Western Conference to the Jets last year. And now you're out in the first round to a wild card team. Ugh. After repeating once again as Central Division champions, you gotta wonder where this is a big effort issue here. Some of these players that should get a lot more effort in the postseason, you gotta wonder if it's a strategical thing, maybe it's a coaching thing.
Yeah,
there's a lot of areas of this team that you can really question right now, I think. And I don't really know where you really start outside of, you need to trade some people away. You may need to trade some people away.
Yeah, I think the tough thing, and you never want to see this out of your team, but trading some of the top guys on your team can get you a lot of guys in return, young guys potentially even. Maybe that's an area where the Predators have to go through. Maybe it's trading one of these big guys. I know they mean a lot to the city and to the team, but maybe you do try to trade one of these guys. Maybe you see that, but, man, there were just a lot of plays. I think specifically in Game 5, do you remember that play where basically it was Jamie Benn versus Ryan Ellis for the puck, and Jamie Benn just shoved him to the shoved Ryan Ellis to the side, kicked it right back in front of the goal, and somebody scored it easily. I believe it was Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just seemed, and it, to me, looking from the outside, it just seemed like a very unconventional type of series from the Predators, when you really could kind of question some of the hustle. Some of the physicality, which was weird.
My girlfriend's been a season ticket holder for 13 years, so she would know very well. She was not happy, and I may get a text correcting me, but I know she was not happy with the play of Ekholm. She was not happy with the play of Turris, just to name a few. There's a lot of players that have been around for a minute or two here. You would think would show a lot more just hustle, just plain hustle in an elimination game. You're facing elimination here. You look at this basic box score, you look at the stats here. There should be no way that the Preds had so many advantages right here. Look at this. They won more faceoffs here. It was almost even in total shots right here. You have four power play opportunities to just the one opportunity allowed for the Stars. 0-4, once again, of course, 0-15 in the entire series here. More block shots, less giveaways. Pekka-Rinne, 49 saves. You just could not produce shots.
Yeah.
You just simply couldn't do it there.
Well, and I remember the power play to close out the third period. I believe the Stars had four. What are they? That's funny.
Yeah.
Four clears, and I think there might have been one shot on goal, but it could have very well likely been zero.
Mm-hmm.
That's inexcusable. It's inexcusable for the Predators to have Forsberg in the middle of the ice on a power play.
Yeah.
Why? All right, like again, I'm not the biggest hockey guy, but any big guy can go do the job of being in front of the goalie and taking away his eyes and hopefully getting a deflection. But very few people have the ability to have a very nice slap shot. Why would you have Forsberg in the middle? There seemed like so many boneheaded things about it.
Strategical issues, man. Strategical questions that have been raised a lot. And that's just something they're going to have to address because the type of roster they have, man, there's no way. There's no way you should be regressing in the playoffs. It just logically shouldn't happen right here. But now that brings it into a very early exit to Preds talk. Kind of sucks. It was something to really get into. Once again, now no Preds talk till October. And I don't know how much Stanley Cup playoff talk we're going to do here unless something crazy happens. I mean, we were able to do a little bit. It's been a fantastic overall playoffs, I think, especially if you like some upsets, if you like some shocking results. I mean, come on, let's just start with the Lightning getting swept by the Blue Jackets.
The top four teams, man.
The Penguins getting swept. Crazy playoffs. So some teams just going to come basically, I wouldn't say completely out of nowhere, but your top contenders in the Stanley Cup playoffs, not
Tanner.
Getting the cup. Yes.
I feel like it might be you time for you to come join the Victor Green side of things.
I'm good.
But I think it could be.
I'm good.
You now have ties to Dallas.
I'm good.
Slight ties, but nonetheless.
No, I'm good.
Ties.
I'm good.
Come on, man.
No, I'm good.
Come on.
No.
You don't have any other teams to root for right now?
I'm good.
Come on.
I'm good.
I'll convince you during the break.
I'm good. I guess Dallas went all the way and won their second Stanley Cup. Wouldn't that? At least Preds fans can say, at least we lost to a team of destiny. Maybe.
Well, it's what we are.
I mean, there's
it's what we will
there's
be.
No long, long bad blood between the Preds and the Stars franchises. But like you said, Rick, this was a very chippy series. Extremely. There are a lot of emotions in a series for a playoff round against a team that's not a traditional rival. But I don't know.
I will say, though, for not being rivals, those teams hated each other.
They really did.
Was any other game but the playoffs, there would have been countless fights. And I mean countless. I really wish DB was here.
Who did I root for now? I'm not rooting for
the Stars. If DB was here, I would have talked way more smack.
DB probably talked smack to you. He was probably initiating it.
We shared some smack talk.
He was probably initiating it.
We were texting a little bit during the game yesterday, but it was really just kind of both of us being like, oh, my God, this sucks. This sucks. I am miserable.
His was definitely liquid fueled, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Most likely here.
Did
I get behind like the Blue Jackets? Something like that.
No, come just join us.
My girlfriend says she hates Radulov. I mean, which makes sense because he used to be on the Preds.
How do you hate Radulov?
Went to the KHL in Russia for his season and just comes back and ends up being a big thorn in the Preds side.
Yeah, he had a couple. Very nice. Very nice.
Did I root for the Blue Jackets? I feel like I might root for the Islanders.
Stop!
I feel like I might root for the Islanders. That's just like a completely random out of the blue team. It's the Eastern Conference team,
come
Rick.
Come join me.
I'm good. I'm good, man.
Cole will join me.
You have your own victory. Cole doesn't care about hockey.
You want to come be a Stars fan?
Say
no.
I'm good.
Okay. This is a lesson. How to end your career in Tennessee radio in 101.
You tried, Rick. You tried really hard.
Yeah. At least you're not Nashville.
All right. Rick's had his victory parade here. 865-546-8200. 546-8200. Going to go ahead and open up the Fan Run phone lines here on this Tuesday. Got a fantastic show lined up ahead here on Overtime with you up until 8 o'clock tonight. Hit the first break of the program. Keep it tuned right here to Fan Run Radio. We go back to the Rick Barnes saga that we thought we'd been done with here for a while. We had yesterday Seth Davis's report for The Athletic. He was just talking about the UCLA head basketball coaching search. And, of course, Rick Barnes is going to get brought up. In case you missed it yesterday, Seth Davis put in his report that Rick Barnes was the one to first reach out to UCLA and UCLA athletic director Dan Guerrero after Jamie Dixon and UCLA's talks fell through. So that was Seth Davis's report from sources that told him that. That it was Rick who reached out first, and then, of course, the buyout was an issue, and Rick Barnes is still at Tennessee. Had a little bit of a discussion about that. Me, Colin, DB talked about, you know, if this changes your outlook whatsoever on Rick Barnes and him being here, his loyalty at Tennessee, all that type of stuff right here. Well, Rick Barnes today has come out on the record, and he has strongly denied Seth Davis's report in The Athletic that he was the one to reach out to UCLA first. Y'all have seen this today, right? Rick, I know you have because y'all talked about it.
I did.
On the previous show.
I saw.
Woo! Yeah, it came right out here. Rick Barnes, he said the report that he first reached out to UCLA the Tuesday before the Final Four, quote, absolute lie, the report is.
Ooh!
Rick Barnes says he was contacted indirectly by someone representing UCLA on April the 2nd. Then he told Philip Fulmer on Friday when UCLA then contacted Barnes officially.
Okay. Okay.
Rick Barnes is saying, nope, absolute lie here. And you got to think he feels strongly about being on the record about this for Rick just to come out and say, hey, no, I didn't do this.
Sure.
Did not do that. He knows what, I mean, granted, it could, some people may find this a minor detail in the whole saga. But a lot of it, and it's true from some of the reaction we saw yesterday, whether it be, you know, people who work here, whether it be people on social media, some people didn't like the fact that he reached out first. You know, some people had their own little take on that, what have you. Rick has come out and denied that. And still, you know, that's the only thing that changes right here. We do know that the talks got very far. I mean, this is according to Barnes himself. But Barnes, once again, I mean, if he's been honest about everything else up to this point, I'm inclined to believe in that he's honest that it was UCLA who reached out to him first. Now, that's not him saying that Seth Davis is a liar or anything. That's not saying that it was fabricated in that story. What it's probably saying is that, hey, maybe one of Seth Davis's UCLA sources just misinformed him. Maybe that's what it all goes back down to here. What do we make of this right here? I mean, because I'm sure he's completely telling the truth when he didn't reach out to UCLA first.
No, I believe him 100%. And yes, that sounds very biased. That sounds very homerish of me. Has he lied to us yet? Has he given us a reason not to believe him?
Pretty honest so far.
I mean, he tried to dig his own grave last week at the press conference. So why should we doubt him now? I believe him 100%.
Okay, I kind of want to play the devil's advocate to you real quick. But, you know, you say he hasn't really given us a reason or he hasn't really lied to us. And I totally agree with that. But you do bring up last week and him saying that, you know, he fully expected he wants to go there. He's mentioned John Wooden as his hero and as his idol multiple times. You know, I feel like I feel like, first off, let me state by, at the end of the day, I don't think this story matters because Rick Barnes is your head coach moving into next season.
I agree.
And moving on to the seasons beyond that, right? But I do think that, you know, I do believe Rick Barnes, but I am playing devil's advocate in here and saying maybe that's not true. You know, maybe there was just flack that came down after his honesty, which I think everyone is very glad he was honest, whether they agree with it or not. But I think he does really like UCLA, and I think there was a strong part of him that wanted to be the coach there. This news didn't surprise me, but I also wasn't necessarily expecting it. I do believe him, but there also is a part of me that is kind of saying to myself, you know, well, he did want to be there, and there was a lot of backlash after he came out and said that he was going to be there, and so maybe this is just the best way for him to put out some fires right now, because ultimately this seems like a story where we're never going to get the actual truth.
Yeah.
It's unfair of us to not give him the benefit of the doubt on this one.
I agree.
And yeah, I mean, that's basically it right there. I wouldn't see why he would be dishonest about this.
Sure.
I just wouldn't think he'd have a reason to.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, him refuting this, it makes him look a little better.
Oh, yeah.
I can certainly see how if he was the first one to reach out, that just makes it seem like, oh, he wanted to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
That makes him look worse.
Yeah, I believe him, and I think the reason he did refute it wasn't just because he didn't want anything out there that wasn't true about him or his program. I think part of it also was he knew that the press conference last week kind of ruffled some feathers, and so he was trying to do anything he could in a way to kind of calm everybody back down that's kind of flustered at the moment. One part of me feels like he just wants the record to be straight. He wants the truth out there, but also I think he knows some of these fans, man, they're not happy with me for being honest, so I'm going to try to do something to get on their good side.
Yeah, I do agree with that. The amount to which he was so definitive in what he said does make me very much realize that, you know, he kind of thought, hey, there is no truth to these rumors. I know that for a fact. And so I'm going to come out and I'm going to put my foot in the ground because that's what I need to do, especially to gain back maybe some of the support that was lost. Because I know even for me, you know, last week, in a couple of ways, I am one of the people, I'll be the first one to admit it, that it did kind of rub me the wrong way,
mm-hmm.
right? It was a thing where, you know, I know a lot of people out there, and I had a lot of conversation with people about it, but there was a lot of people out there that were saying, well, this is a business decision. You know, and his idol went there. And maybe, you know, they're a very historic program. So, you know, it's just a business thing. And for me, it was like, well, I get it's a business thing. But also, he really thought he was going to be the next coach at UCLA, right? And it didn't really seem like he had any trouble leaving Tennessee for it, mm-hmm. right? It didn't – yes, it was a big decision for him. But at the end of the day, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And today was definitely a moment where I was kind of like, okay, I know that all happened last week, but I also know that he was responding to something, or the contact with UCLA was him responding to something and not him reaching out for something.
I think a lot of the perception does matter how everything did get started, right? You're going to have a much better view of Rick Barnes. You're going to have just a better overall, I guess, if you want to call it the approval rating of him. You're going to have a much more higher thoughts of him if it turns out that, hey, it was UCLA first, and then he got caught up in, well, yeah, this might be a dream job here. I might want to coach in West, where John Wooden has coached. You know, it's a lot different than, okay, tournament's over here. I might not have another good team like I had, or I might not have a team as good as his current team was with Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, and everybody else. I might be wanting to get the hell out of here and finish my career somewhere else. Seems a lot different. It's a lot different type of perception of Rick Barnes as a person.
Yeah.
Which now I don't think it's fair to say that you wouldn't believe him here.
Mm-hmm.
I totally believe him.
Yeah,
UCLA reached out first just because their coaching search was so chaotic. It reminds you a lot of a Tennessee football head coaching search. It reminds you a lot of a Tennessee coaching search, period, in any type of sport.
Sure.
So they're scrambling everywhere. Jamie Dixon turns them down. Well, what was the next target? Hey, let's go reach out to Rick Barnes. And sure enough, they each put the feelers out there. But it ended up, UCLA just does not know how buyouts work.
I will say, I think at the end of the day, I'm I don't think personally I am as quick as you guys are to give him the undoubted benefit of the doubt.
I just do because how many coaches come out in a press conference like he did and said, yeah, if it wasn't for the ballot issue, I'd be UCLA's head coach right now.
Not many.
Yeah, so if he's saying that, I'm like, well, we were all obviously taken aback by the just brute honesty. So, yeah, I'm inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not saying there's no possibility that he could be maybe doing like a half-truth type of thing, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
But if he was so certain that he was going to be UCLA's head coach, why would it not surprise you that, you know, that he might have reached out?
Well, that's why I wasn't totally shocked in the initial report, but for him to come out the very next day and strongly refute I understand. I understand you got to make a good public relations move.
Sure, I do agree.
But still, yeah, I mean, he's come out quickly and strongly denied. He used the words absolute lie. I mean, I think we all know what the relationship is right now. Yes, he does love Tennessee. He does love this community here, but at the end of the day, still a coaching job, and keyword there, job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no different than any other type of employment. So I get the relationship here. I'm not going to think he's some perfect type of figure who can do no wrong, and he'd love to live out the last days of his life here, even after he coaches in Knoxville. No, he's a coach. He's doing this on a contract basis. And like, okay, I understand. Now show me some results on the court. Give me some wins, and we won't bring up the fact that you probably wanted to get the hell out of here at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
certainly. I'll ask you guys this real quick. How much stock do you put in, or how much do you care if a coach loves being at a certain school or, quote, wants to be at a certain school? Because a lot of people that were mad about Rick Barnes saying – when it came out that he reached out, a lot of people were saying, oh, you don't love Tennessee, you don't want to be here, blah, blah, blah. And I always just thought, well, I mean, it. While we would, as a fan base, want a coach to love Tennessee as much as we do,
At the end of the day,
it's a job.
Unless you're like Philip Fulmer.
Yeah.
There's differences. Yeah. There's people that grew up in the area, they played for the program, they love it as much as you do, and probably even more.
Yeah,
if they've been in the program. No, it's just I've never – every coach, especially every new coach, is always going to say, oh, man, I've always loved this place. I'd always want to coach here. Prout said the same thing.
And that's a lot.
Lane Kiffin said the same thing. Jeremy Pruitt
would
be on the next charter flight to Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Yeah.
If he was offered,
he'd be gone.
That's the reality of the situation. I've never, for years and years, even in my sheepiest days, I've never fully bought that a coach just, oh, absolutely loves the area here, absolutely loves it. No, you don't. Of course, you're going to say that. You think Nick Saban loves the people of Tuscaloosa, Alabama?
I don't think he likes them at all.
Hell no.
No, I don't think he likes them at all.
What's some other comparisons here? Do we think Gus Malzahn really likes the people of Auburn, Alabama, who would burn down his house if he doesn't win the West this year?
They try to run him out of town every year.
All the time.
He would rather
be at Arkansas.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
I believe
he does.
I believe Kirby Smart likes being at Georgia. He played for Georgia.
Coach O likes being at LSU. He is the Cajun.
He loves it
up there.
One team, one heartbeat.
Yeah, but that whole argument about he doesn't love Tennessee, he doesn't want to be here, I think is a kind of lame argument. I think it is. It's a job for these guys. And yeah, we want them to love it like Philip Fulmer loves Tennessee and, you know, Steve Spurrier loves Florida, and you go on and on. But at the end of the day, a lot of these guys don't. They just want a paycheck, they want to do their job, and that's it. And I'm okay with that.
Sure.
I mean, what the hell else do people work for?
Nothing.
The majority of people work for money. Majority of people work for the best, their family.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the best living outcome and situations for their family.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
That's just what it is. And I'm fine with that as long as you do your job well. Just get some wins, man.
Sure.
Just win, get some banners, and I'll be okay. Do what you're now paid almost $5 million a year for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's all that matters to me right now. We got to hit another break here. Quick Vols baseball update. We're at the top of the third. It is scoreless over at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. The Gardner-Webb Bulldogs wearing their black and red digital camo uniforms.
You're right. It looks like something from a Call of Duty gun. That was the best line.
That is a skin you can put on your gun on Call of Duty or Fortnite.
Yeah.
They currently got one on and two outs, though. Scoreless over at Lindsey Nelson Stadium right now. We'll update you if any scoring happens in that one, but we're going to have to hit another break here. 865-546-8200 to hop on the Fan Run phone lines here. More of Overtime on the other side. Back here on Overtime, we got some updates in the second big trial up in New York City in the college basketball corruption scandal. Ooh, very corrupt. This, however, this is a little interesting tidbit because college football has been brought up.
Yeah.
Yes, college football has been brought into the college basketball corruption trial here. The key government witness, this is a ESPN article, by the way, by Paula Levine, given due credit here, like all Big J's do. The key government witness in the FBI's college basketball corruption trial began his testimony today by turning the conversation to football and discussing multiple payments he had made to players at major programs, including at least once at a coach's direction.
Ooh.
Your football programs thought they were safe, huh? They thought they were safe. Former financial advisor Marty Blazer, that is the key witness here, he said that from 2000 all the way to 2013 and 14, he made payments to college football players in order to secure them as clients when they turned pro and needed the services of a financial advisor. Mr. Blazer said he made payments to players at, get ready here, Pittsburgh, Michigan, Notre Dame, Northwestern. Damn, Northwestern. I thought they had integrity.
You would think, man.
Academic institution.
One of
I
had a guy from high school went to Northwestern around that time frame.
Ooh.
He might have gotten paid.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
And that's not over yet. We got North Carolina. North Carolina doing filthy stuff. What a shocker.
What?
Penn State. And Alabama!
Everyone's shocked.
I am stunned. I am floored.
Yeah, me too.
He said he gave, let's see here. He said, I think they're talking about Penn State. Penn State's the last school listed here on this list. After Penn State says, where he said he gave $10,000 to the family of a player who would wind up the 11th pick of the 2009 NFL draft. That description matches Penn State linebacker Aaron Maben, who was drafted by the Bills in 2009.
Ooh.
Blazer said a Penn State assistant whose son then played in the NFL arranged the deal, which was actually a loan that would end up being paid back. Former Penn State assistant coach, and I just accidentally went all the way down on the article here. That was an accident. Former Penn State coach, where was I here? It was actually a loan that would be paid back. Here we go. Former Penn State assistant coach Larry Johnson's son, Larry Jr., he played for the Kansas City Chiefs at the time. The elder Johnson is currently an assistant at Ohio State. Johnson Sr. told Yahoo Sports today that Blazer's accusations are, quote, not accurate at all. Not accurate in the fact that it was actually $9,000, not $10,000. He didn't actually say that, but he didn't call it an outright lie. He just said, it's not accurate. Johnson further told Yahoo, why is it that something like that comes out? Nobody says anything to me. This is the first call I've gotten. All of a sudden, this Marty Blazer guy can just say whatever he wants. That is absolutely amazing. Wow. End quote. Marty Blazer. The name Marty Blazer. He just sounds like a shady guy.
He sounds like he would be the villain in like Back to the Future or something.
Marty Blazer.
You got Marty McFly in there.
Yeah, but then like certainly. His evil twin or something.
Evil twin Marty Blazer.
Yeah, like rolled up cuffs and
Marty
jeans.
Blazer sounds like a corrupt general manager or something.
Yeah.
Oh, something. Yeah, probably. Blazer, who is 49, said he never paid a coach. His involvement in paying college football players has been previously reported in connection with a criminal investigation in North Carolina relating to improper payments, shockingly made to UNC football players dating back to 2010. Among the UNC players, Blazer testified Tuesday that he paid was one he described as a former first-round pick drafted by the Giants in 2009. New York drafted UNC wide receiver Hakeem Nicks in the first round that year. Hakeem Nicks, a little blast from the past right there.
Wow, yeah.
Was it him or Victor Cruz who did the salsa dancing?
Cruz.
Okay. Hakeem Nicks, he had like the giant hands, right? I remember there was like something about each of them. I think it was like Hakeem Nicks. Well, I'm pretty sure it was before the Super Bowl when they played the Patriots. It's like, oh yeah, Hakeem Nicks has like giant hands he can catch these footballs with.
I don't know.
That's the only thing that sticks out when I think of Hakeem Nicks. What were you going to say, Rick?
Yeah, I remember that Giants three-headed monster back in their prime of Victor Cruz, Mario Manningham, and Hakeem Nicks.
I forgot about Manningham, too, man.
Because Manningham made that ridiculous catch in their second Super Bowl win on the sideline.
Yeah, he did.
That was nasty.
Continuing here when it comes to Blazer's testimony, he was not one of those criminally charged under the state's athlete agent law in North Carolina case, but his runner, who is former UNC cornerback Chris Hawkins, was and is still awaiting his trial. And oddly enough, it says, Blazer's testimony Tuesday was in relation to his more recent connection to aspiring basketball agent Christian Dawkins, who, along with ex-Adidas consultant Merle Code, are facing a series of bribery-related charges in connection with alleged payments made to five assistant basketball coaches at six universities to influence their players to sign with Dawkins' fledgling sports management business and certain financial advisors once they turn pro. Alabama getting name dropped here. Now, just because they get name dropped doesn't mean that they're going to open up an investigation. But, man, I'm totally shocked payments were made to Alabama players.
I am, too. It's not like they've
had – stunned Nick Saban would allow that to go on down in Tuscaloosa.
It's not like they've had any success in the last, 10 years.
Absolutely stunned here.
Just six natties. Or five – I don't know. I forgot. I don't care.
Didn't think football would get drug into this, though.
I didn't either.
I wonder, you got to think, there's a lot more witnesses coming at this trial. What do they keep name-dropping these big-time football programs?
I know.
Oh, God. What? Oh, God. Don't let it be us.
Is there any way we could be in this?
It's most likely. It's very likely.
Yeah.
They had schools like Pittsburgh, Northwestern, UNC.
Yeah, even the teams who did very poorly at cheating were still named in it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I don't know, man, but that's your other update here. Did not think college football would get drug into this. But, hey, give you a little shocker here. College football recruiting, kind of just as dirty as college basketball.
Hey, not to mention, the whole world revolves around college football.
Yes, it does. Yeah, definitely does.
My world does. It's fact.
My world revolves around the NHL playoffs, personally.
Wow, he does it again. Rick, be careful or I will take away your wrestling
Look,
minute.
I got about yeah. I'm going to be honest with you, TC. I have about one or two more in me that I'm just going to try to sneak in. I'm sorry.
I might have Cole cut your mic.
You know, I have to try to do it sneakily. Slyly.
Old sneakily.
You can't get one radar. You can't get them past me.
Well, see, I don't want to say challenge accepted because I'm going to spend the next rest of the show every single segment trying to throw it in. But I'm going to try to get one or two more in. Most likely after this.
I'm going to be paying a lot of attention.
Okay.
Unlike the Preds top line. See, I got one in myself. I can get one in myself.
Did you see the video of PK Subban snoring with Lindsey Vonn yesterday? And then there was just a great caption of basically... PK Subban continuing his whole playoff run, even though the Preds got eliminated.
865-546-8200 here. One more segment, hour number one of overtime coming up after this. Stick with us.
Last time I saw you, say, well, so-
Last segment of hour one of overtime here on your Tuesday. Man, NFL draft just 2 days away from starting in the Music City, right in the middle of Nashville. There's also other stuff going on in Nashville this weekend, too, by the way. Not a Preds playoff game. Oh. I beat you to it, Rick. I beat you to it.
Well, I win because you just...
Well, I wasn't going to let you, but you said you were going to get them over. Joke's on you. I am the most self-depreciating person that probably works here. Am I? I don't know. Is there anyone more self-depreciating? I feel like guys on your show can be pretty self-depreciating, Rick.
Yeah, but none of us have the teams that we follow like you do.
What does that mean?
Well, that means your teams aren't very good.
Okay. You're also a Cowboys fan.
What does self-depreciating mean?
And a
I'm a Cowboy. What?
And a Mavericks fan.
2011 championship for the Mavs.
Okay.
Five Super Bowl rings for the Cowboys.
When was the last one?
The
90s. I'm just saying. I don't think I have completely. Yeah, I know I got teams of bad luck, but look, still. I know I got the. We all got the balls. We all had that in
common. Here's the crux of this conversation.
Look, I know I got the Raiders and the Braves and the Preds. I understand.
Here's the crux of this conversation.
Yes. What is it?
I don't know what self-depreciating means.
Do you have Google? get you a definition. Come on, get you a definition. Come on. I know you can do it.
I don't know, dude. There's not really a... Oh.
More specifically, self-depreciating.
Belittling humor. Or undervaluing oneself. Excessively modest.
And use that in a form of humor. Self-depreciating humor, it's a thing.
Breaking
oh!
news, Andre, home run Tennessee!
Andre Lipsius with a home run. Two-run bomb in the bottom of the fourth, breaking... The deadlock.
Let's go.
Vols on top of Gardner Webb. 2-0. Bye. 10th of the year. Woo. Let's see this one here. Let's see the
smack.
What type of distance did you get on this one here? When do you hit that out? To right?
Left.
Left. Okay. I didn't really see.
Looked like left center.
We were trying to talk about the definite. Yeah, left center.
Woo. Right over the bleachers.
Over the porch back there. I see you. I see you, Andre. Okay. But, Rick, I digress. I'm not the only one at this station who has bad teams.
I know. It was a cheap shot by me.
There's a lot of Titans fans here. We have a Colts fan.
My baseball team has never won the championship.
Mine has. They
were really close.
11 times.
They lost it one time to a Colts team in very bad fashion.
Our last title. It's been a while since my Cardinals have won a pennant.
I still hate both Nelson Cruz and David Freese an equal amount. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Freeze, I mean, let's be honest. He's with the Dodgers now. I have no more feelings towards him.
All right.
Did a lot for us back then, but now he's a rival. And
Cole,
so,
how are the Cards doing this season so far?
Started off slow. I think they've kind of picked, to be honest with you, I'm not sure either. They started off very,
you're 13
very
and
9.
Slow. You're second in the Central.
I mean, we swept the Dodgers a couple weeks ago.
Got the Brewers tonight.
Beat them last night. Yelich finally tamed him last night.
But he'll hit another homer again tonight. It's just the way
he did last night.
Oh, there you go.
He did last night. So that was the first game against him. He didn't hit one off of us.
Big Paul Goldschmidt is a player I wanted my own team to sign. Very bad.
We just signed him to a multi-year deal right at the beginning of the season. So he will be a Redbird for a while. You know what? I need to read up on my Cardinal news.
You had 18 hits in a game last night.
13-5 over the Brewers. Yeah. Mm. It's been a good little stretch so far. It really has. Start of the season was abysmal.
Wait. Whoa.
What?
Did you know that you had a player hit two grand slams in one inning one time?
Yeah, it's his bobblehead night.
Fernando Tatis Sr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in...
It's pretty incredible.
Nice.
Oh, gosh. I saw it earlier. I can't remember, but yeah. Only player in the major leagues to ever do that.
Well, good for him. Give it to Nashville, though, as we wind down hour number one. So not only will the draft bring a whole lot of people to the city of Nashville, get this nice little graphic here, tweeted out here. The people in Nashville expected this weekend. We can subtract 20,000 from a potential Western Conference semifinal game for the Preds. But that still leaves total estimated people 322,700.
Yeah, Lee.
That's not counting the people who live in Nashville. That's counting people who will be coming into Nashville. So 225,000 expected for the draft. There's the Music City Marathon on Sunday, I believe. 30,000 people. A Jimmy Buffett concert Saturday night, 20,000 at Bridgestone. They're expecting, I don't know if it's going to be this bad, but they're expecting 18,000 people for the Nashville flea market over at the fairgrounds.
Jeez.
There's a Nashville Food Festival at the Nashville Speedway, 5,000 people. Ultimate Michael Jackson, 5,000 people. Winona and Martina at the Grand Ole Opry House, 8,800 people. There's a lot of stuff here.
How much is the draft expecting?
225,000.
That is incredible.
And I will be one of them.
You're going?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Back in 1999, by the way, Rick. Had to look that up. It was eating me alive.
Well, thank you, Cole, our MLB historian right here.
Yeah,
you're welcome. Basically. You're welcome.
Nashville is going to be the cluster of all clusters.
The cluster of all sports except NHL. You know what? That was my last one. I feel guilty about it now. I feel guilty.
One more in the wrestling minutes.
I feel guilty
away.
About it now. I'm not going to do it. I feel guilty.
It's okay. I guess you've earned this. I guess.
They say act like you've been there before, but we haven't in a while. So
that's true.
Don't know how.
Hour number two on deck coming up next. Stick with us here. You're listening to Overtime on Fan Run Radio. With your cupcakes. It's a little secret just around me.